You are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
In 30 years' time, the question will be, what can you do? Not what letters you've got written down on a piece of paper.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This is Ross at Teacher Toolkit. This is our Teacher Toolkit podcast, being blogged on the most influential blog on education in the UK. I'm with five or six people. I'll get them to introduce themselves, but I've got 10 education provocations called the Big Education Conversation. I'm going to start off with introducing you to Tom Rogers. Tom, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everybody. Tom here.
And where do you work, Tom?
I teach in Spain, everyone. Don't be jealous.
Just accept it and move on.
Okay, so the first provocation, Tom. Schools should be judged on a much broader set of outcomes. Your thoughts, please.
The answer to that is a very simple, I don't know. Because actually, when you think about it, at the moment, they're only judged on the data and the progress and attainment that students make. I'd like to see a system where parents are involved in how schools are judged. And thank you, Catherine Birbal-Singh, for that one, because it's true. We need to allow parents into schools. We need to ask them what they think. I don't know if we should be judging schools. We should be allowing schools to judge themselves and then allow other schools to see if their own judgments are correct and share good practice. So in other words, Ross, the whole system is kahoot.
Okay, I'm just going to stop you there before you get a bit too upset. I'm going to introduce our next teacher, Darren. So next provocation, the voices of parents, families and students should be central to policy, central to the process of education policy. So what are your thoughts?
See, I've got mixed feelings about this one. You've got your key stakeholders here, your parents, families, students, but do they know enough about the business of running a school to actually form education policy? I don't think the premise that I've experienced school, therefore I should be able to form policy. It's like saying I've been to a doctor's, therefore I should be able to inform medical policy. And it depends how big the policy or how significant the policy is. I certainly think schools themselves need to take the views of parents and families and in fact the local community into account a lot more, because schools are there to serve the communities and the key stakeholders must have a say in how these schools are run and how they best serve the communities.
Okay, thank you. What I failed to ask you both is just where can people connect with you online and find out more about you? So Darren first.
Yep, my Twitter handle is Keys Education,
and
K-E-Y-S Education, and my website is Keys to Learn, KeysToLearn.org.
Thank you. And Tom?
I'm Tom Rogers, at Rogers History.
And you blog for The Test, don't you? You write for The Test?
I try my best, Ross.
I think you're doing a good job. Right, we're going to interrupt Naomi across the table from me. Naomi, who's not listening just yet, but I'm going to introduce her. Naomi, I would like to ask you what your views are on students who neither want to go to university or might not be able to go to university. Should not be viewed as inadequate. What are your thoughts?
They shouldn't be viewed as inadequate because those students that don't have the money to go to university or the ability at that moment in time will go and get other will go out and get other career choices. For example, my dad, who is dyslexic, he was very successful in his career. Am I moving around too much?
Yes, it's hilarious.
He was very successful in his career. However, he didn't necessarily have the academic ability at that time. He does have the ability, but he wasn't viewed to have the ability. So he went out and he was successful in a different field, a different sector.
So can I just ask, what would you see as an alternative?
An alternative would be to make sure that in school and universities, we provide other options other than the academic routes. And also, for those dyslexic students, make sure that they have other choices. We don't have a breadth of choices at the moment. And it really does put others at a disadvantage. And it is completely unjust.
Okay, thank you. Where can people find out more about you and on your blog or Twitter channel?
You can find me at Roberts Naomi, Naomi CR. Looking forward to seeing you there.
Okay, thank you. Right, we'll go into a couple more provocations. So for Tom, this one's for you. High stake testing.
Oh, God, Ross.
Is wholly inadequate means of assessing a student's overall full range of talents. What are your views?
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, that we know that.
So what would be an alternative? Because we know the answer is yes, it's not fair. What could be an alternative? I'll put you on the spot.
God, now you're asking. Okay, so I think another alternative, and I know there'll be a lot of people who'll hate this answer, and I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm putting it out there. A guy called Salman Khan, you know Khan Academy? He said that in 30 years' time, the question will be, what can you do? Not what letters you've got written down on a piece of paper. So I'm not saying we should do this, but I'm saying what he says is in 30, 40, 50 years' time, it will be a case of what's in your portfolio. And in the portfolio will be skills you have. I can play the piano. I can plumb a sink. I can do this. I can do that. Now, that is nothing against somebody knowing and being able to recite Shakespeare, because I actually think that's fantastic. But what I am saying is, you know, having a portfolio of things, I hate to use the word skills because I'll get somebody trying to assassinate me. But, you know, things that kids can actually do, okay, and can do and can prove they can do. We have to remember that countries like China, what they want from us is our creative capability. That's what their desire is, to hear us sing, is to hear us produce theatre productions. They design their school buildings like something out of 1890, a Chaucer book, okay? You know, that's what they want from us, but our education system seems to be geared towards something else.
Okay, very interesting. So can you tweet your thoughts to Teacher Toolkit or at Rogers History? Please be kind. But let's just unpick that thought about high-stake testing. What could be the alternative? So my final question for Darren. So the next provocation. The way teachers teach should foster more than the ability to recall snippets of knowledge for an exam.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really fascinated by the use of knowledge organisers now and the teaching of facts. I think it's great. However, I do think there's a missing link, and that missing link is wisdom. Knowledge is great, but misapplied without any wisdom, it's actually dangerous. And in typical English teacher fashion, I have to reference Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And Victor Frankenstein, who had a myriad corpuscula of knowledge, was used destructively and brought about his demise. And I think without moral education, without spiritual education, education, ethical education, I think the drilling of facts and knowledge just becomes in a void. And I don't think students will be able to apply it effectively to live healthy and productive lives as human beings.
Amen.
Very fascinating. So thank you for that. So there's six provocations. We have a few more, but this is episode one. This is Ross McGill at Teacher Toolkit, most influential blog on education in the UK. Thank you for listening.
Right, hang on. Wait.
Oh, apologies.
Wait. Provocation for Ross. Ross, everyone wants to know, how have you written all your blogs and how did you get time to do it? Come on, tell us.
Well, I've actually got a blog on how I do it.
Yeah, but we want
so if you want to read it, okay. My secret, I suppose, has been after writing over 950 blogs and 3 books, I guess my view is still I have my own demons about my literacy and my writing skills, but I guess I've now got to a place where a lot of teachers contact me and say they like my teacher voice, they like what I write. So that gives me good energy and a good bit of feedback, and I know I've not always been right or done all the usual kind of early adopter blogger kind of skills such as clickbait and resources and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So I've learned all that. But essentially what drives me is helping and sharing resources, because when you look at actually social media academic research, more successful people or people that gain traction stems from sharing ideas. If you don't, you know, and everyone, there's this particular niche. If I want to write a blog about ranting away and whatever I wanted to talk about, then that would attract a specific audience. But in academic research on social media, you have two camps, a me informer or an informer. A me informer is all about me. Whinge, retweet me, clickbait.
Would you stop, Ross, talking about my account on your podcast, please?
And then an informer is sharing ideas, shouting out to other people, recognising other people's good work, and also mixing that with sharing your own content. So I guess my secret over the years is, you know, it's been quite a workload journey, writing lots of blogs, but one little tip I learned from Paul Sutton, who's one of my ex-ed teachers, he was paralysed from the neck down. He would manage the entire school through his wheelchair, but also through voice automated emails, because he couldn't actually physically type. So I'd sit and watch him in my line management meetings and see him reply to emails using Dragon Dictation, which is a lovely piece of software that automates your verbal commands. So I started to use that in my own office, and then I started to think, how can I do this in my blogs? And then on my journeys home in the car, I'd speak into my phone, and with the little apps that you have on your phone, it would automate your thoughts. So I had a real great workload, blogging, eureka moment where I could blog content much quicker, use the time on the journey home more productively, to create immediate thoughts from my working day, to also a bit of therapy, digest. So I guess that's why I've written so much. And, you know, 20 minutes here or there, a bit of coding, a bit of blogging, add an image, and then you got a blog for the next day. And I'm not denying it's a workload issue and people would question your priorities, but for me, with a young son at home where I can't really see many friends anymore because I'm always at home, childcare, 20 minutes on the computer is pretty much what everyone does every day of their life. So I'm no, you know, super guru or genius here. I'm just doing what everyone else does. I've just managed to work more smartly and use my blogging enthusiasm and skills with my platform, which I've grown for 10 years. You know, I start with one follower, one reader. I started my blog just to reflect on a bit of therapy. I never knew what it would become what it is today. But because I've been passionate and consistent, that's why it's the way it is. So my five C's would be, thought about this last night actually, I might not be able to remember them, but be clear about what you want to write, be consistent. You know, if I started blogging about football on my site tomorrow, people would think, what's going on? I told you I'd forget them. Clarity, consistency, content. So it's, you know, meaningful content. The other two I've forgotten, but I'll blog them on this account so people that want to choose to listen can. And I'm conscious that the podcast is over time. But there you go. This is Ross, Teacher Toolkit. Thank you for the random question, Tom and Darren, for your contributions, and Naomi. This is Ross signing off. Teacher Toolkit podcast, most influential blog on education in the UK.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.